On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Unforced errors on the Tall Can Audio Network for your holiday Monday. More likely Tuesday morning commute. How's it going, everybody? Matt Robinson along with you on the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. This is Unforced Errors number 66. As I mentioned, this is the Monday, holiday Monday, of a civic long weekend. I was corrected last week on the show. I said it was Family Day, which here in Ottawa, Ontario, is exactly what it's called. But Amy Burke has been around co-hosting several episodes of Tall Can Sports talking about the Olympics. And she reminded me that it is Islander Day in PEI. So if you're listening in PEI, happy Islander Day to you. I'm sure it's a million other things in a million other provinces. So whatever you're calling it, I hope you enjoyed it. It's more likely you're listening to this show on Tuesday morning, commuting into work. Hope you had a great long weekend. Mine was fascinating. Went home and saw some family. I went to a two-year-old's birthday party. Also a gender reveal party for different members of the family that are having kids or dealing with young kids, whatever might be going on. And it became these family affairs, they seem to be coming and going in cycles. I can remember in my family, at least in particular, there's four of us that are of similar age in terms of my sisters and my cousin. And we were loud, annoying children running around doing all kinds of stuff and tearing shit up and just like kids are, right? You're just generally loud. And then we started to mellow out a little bit. And about 10 years later, there was this second wave of cousins that showed up and started tearing shit up at all these family parties. And then they started to mellow out a little bit. But now it got to the point over the next couple of years after that where the first wave, my wave, discovered alcohol. And it reached a point where we were not embarrassed to drink it in front of our parents. And then we became the loud ones again and started messing things up. And then that kind of mellowed out as you kind of settle down and everybody gets their lives together a little bit and you do whatever you might be doing. And then the first wave starts having kids, and now they're at a point where they're tearing stuff up and there's toddlers running around and, you know, they're loud when they're happy and they're loud when they're unhappy. And then you got newborns and there's more newborns on the way. And we had a 5-year-old. We seem to come up and down. There's these waves on how this is all going to go. And I'm not sure when the next one is, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be me. Like I don't assume I'm going to. I mean, I never lost alcohol, so I'm not going to discover alcohol again. It was an interesting weekend, a lot of fun. Good to see the family, good to have kids running around and stuff again. But it just became obvious to me that for a long time, these parties had kind of chilled out again, and now we're kind of on another one of these waves of high-volume party guests. But that kind of makes it fun. So that's how I spent my long weekend. A couple of things to get to here. First things first, we will post another Tall Can Sports on Tuesday. Likely be ready for your commute home from work or whenever you might want to get around to it, maybe Wednesday morning as you head back in. It will be another show with Canadian Paralympian Amy Burke. She's been great so far on the network talking about the Olympics. And she's someone who's been to these high-end sports. She knows what it's like to be gearing up for the biggest games of your life, to be at the Olympic Village, these sorts of things. And she's brought some great insights so far, and her personality is a lot of fun. So she's going to return again, and she'll be on a couple times throughout the rest of the Olympic Games here. But the next one will be tomorrow, which is Tuesday, we'll talk about a lot of things. The Canadian women have advanced to play the Americans again in the Olympic gold medal game, as most people predicted. So we'll take a look at that. I know she's got some thoughts on the reemergence of the Russian doping scandal, if it ever went away. Certainly she has been someone who's been impacted by that much more directly in the summer games. And so we'll ask for her opinion on that and a few other things. Rob will return later in the week as well. We'll get into a bunch of things there as well. I don't know. Maybe Melnick caught Dion Phaneuf stealing ketchup packets on his way out of town or something. Equally, that shit ain't free, you know. Right, so anything there. Apparently he's appointing himself CEO. That's going to go just awesome. But here we are, Monday night, holiday Monday. Wanted to get something out the door for you guys for your Tuesday morning return to work, whatever you might be doing. So thought we would touch on a couple of things here. Let's start with the Blue Jays. Camp officially opens. I mean, pitchers and catchers reported last week, but now everyone is in town. They're firing things up. Already concern over Troy Tulowitzki. If you didn't understand what the Blue Jays were trying to do this offseason, it's become very clear now. And that was beef up the infield with some more suitable replacements than Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney, because your second baseman and your shortstop, it's been a very long time since they have shown anything in that would fill you with confidence that they're going to play a full season. So Troy Tulowitzki misses all but 60 games of last season. The most recent injury was an ankle. And as he's returning from that, we find out now he's dealing with bone spurs, and there's some question whether or not he'll be ready to play on opening day. And so all of a sudden, you know, with some of the moves that they've made in terms of Diaz and Solarte and some of the pieces that they've brought in, it becomes very clear what they were worried about. And I mean, we already kind of suspected that. We already knew that. But it's been reinforced now very, very early. So who knows what Tulowitzki is going to contribute this year. The way we talk about him and the way that his last couple of seasons have looked, he comes off as a lot older than he is. I believe he's 32 or 33 years old. I think he's 32 turning 33 very soon. But we talk about him like a 37-year-old. And man, if you start looking around at how much you want to commit to Josh Donaldson on a long-term deal who's a very similar age, you know, it's something to keep in mind. So that's a concern now already. Of more interest is late last week, the Blue Jays signed lefty Jaime Garcia to be their fifth starter. I don't mind it. I guess you would probably call him a poor man's Mark Burley, if we're being honest. He's going to throw around 90, 91 miles an hour, and He's a ground ball pitcher. When he's really got his stuff working, it's all low in the zone, and you're trying to hit a lot of ground balls. In theory, that's great. When you play at the Dome, and when you're going to Yankee Stadium, and when you're going to Fenway, and all these band boxes around the American League East, you want a guy who induces a lot of ground balls. You don't want a fly ball guy. That said, when you have a guy who hits a lot of ground balls, there's a lot of balls in play. You need a good infield defense. And now, what is Troy Tulowitzki? How healthy is Devin Travis? You start looking around in that sense, this becomes a concern again. You have a lot of your rotation, quite frankly, that is going to really test your infield. And I just, at this point, I don't have a ton of confidence in that infield. So I think it was a good signing in the sense that you needed somebody. Joe Biagini now becomes the interesting story. I think for the time being, they're going to leave him stretched out as a starter, or get him stretched out as a starter. See if you get through spring training healthy. If you don't, he still slots into your rotation. Then you make a decision as to whether or not he goes to Buffalo and becomes your sixth guy that you call up when you need somebody, or do you put him back in the bullpen? I can tell you already, John Gibbons wants him in the bullpen. I think the Blue Jays have made a couple of signings here and bringing in guys that might be okay. But I'm not in love with their bullpen. If they're not able to sign anyone else for that bullpen here over the next couple of weeks, I guarantee you John Gibbons wants Joe Biagini in the pen as a guy that he can count on. So that's, I guess, up to management as well in terms of what they might have up their sleeves, who else they might be able to bring in. But the time being, that's kind of a wait and see thing. For me personally, I probably prefer Jaime Garcia as your fifth starter to Joe Biagini, just because there are other things. If nothing else, it creates depth. The chances of any team getting through the entire season without injuries within the rotation are very low. And so Biagini is a guy that you could bring up to fill a couple of starts if you needed to, and it wouldn't be the end of the world. At the same time, though, I think Gibbons is looking much more directly at the bullpen and how he could help there. And I think, ultimately, that's where he'd like to see him. Let's switch gears a little bit. We'll stay in the AL East. As I was heading back to Ottawa at the end of my long weekend, I saw that it appears the Boston Red Sox have signed J.D. Martinez, which is not good news for the Blue Jays. Probably not shocking news if you're a Red Sox fan. It appeared that it had come down to the Diamondbacks and the Red Sox were bidding on the player, and it was never really likely, at least in my opinion, that the Diamondbacks were going to outbid the Red Sox. The Diamondbacks do okay. They probably regret the Zach Greinke deal that they signed, and they did get into a bidding war there, but in that case, it was with the Dodgers, a division rival out there in the NL West, and they probably felt a little more pressure to get that done, to stop him from ending up there. So in this case, if you know that he's probably going to leave and go to the AL East, maybe the Diamondbacks are a little bit less worried about it. At least that's kind of my read on the situation. The Red Sox, however, they're looking around at their own division and at some of the other big, some of the other big acquisitions of the offseason. They're looking at the Yankees and the lineup that they are putting together with Giancarlo Stanton, obviously with Judge, with Sanchez. It's becoming a murderer's row there. I still don't love the Red Sox rotation after Sale. We'll see what kind of bounce back they get out of a couple of guys there. But for me, they needed this. They still have a pretty good lineup, even without J.D. Martinez. But now that they've added him, that lineup lacked that one big bat. I don't think they truly understood how much they were going to miss David Ortiz. And so adding this player kind of helps make up for some of that. And all their other pieces, and they've got some great ones with Bradley and Bogarts and some of the other guys they have kicking around there that are a really nice lineup. It gets a lot scarier when you add this bat to the middle. You know, you can push all those guys down a little bit in the lineup, and it immediately becomes something much harder to deal with, quite frankly. And so, to me, that's where this is a bigger deal. I still think the Red Sox were going to battle the Yankees. But if you couldn't really strengthen the rotation, which is, I think, what they wanted to do, and I don't blame them, knowing that they're going to have to face that Yankee lineup as many times as they are, then maybe you go out and you do something like this, right? I can't get my pitching to where I need it to be, so give me another bat and give me a big one, And so he fills a major role there. It's not good news for the Blue Jays. I don't know how much it really changes for them. It got harder. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think they were ever going to finish ahead of Boston or ahead of New York. I think at best here, you're looking at them to chase down the second wild card, be in a race there with Minnesota, maybe the Angels. I think that's probably where you see the Blue Jays in a best case scenario. So how many games you finish behind New York and Boston is probably irrelevant within your own division, but you're going to need to steal some wins from those guys, and it just got harder to do it. It just got much more difficult. I don't think, you know, this isn't a scary move for me in the sense that I thought the Blue Jays might get Martinez. I don't think there was ever a chance of that. But at that point, you're just hoping he doesn't end up in your division. And sure enough, there he is, plopped right down in the middle of it. So not great news there if you're a Blue Jays fan. Probably pretty good news for Boston Red Sox fans. Last thing we'll touch on here is the weekend of the Leafs. And I'm not going to spend, as I said, I was off dealing with some family engagements. So I didn't see either game in their entirety. I saw bits and pieces. Leafs lose to the Penguins in what appears to be, I don't know, I guess you'd call it an ugly one, but the Penguins are a better team than you, so really what are you expecting, I guess. And then sort of another ugly game, both teams on a back-to-back, you're kind of fighting life and death with the Red Wings, which is not where you want to be if you consider yourself a contender. Curtis McElhinney goal, as I said, since it's a back-to-back. But they pull out a winner late. Auston Matthews buries one with 30 seconds left. You get the 2 points you need, and on you go. So 2 of 4 points over the weekend. I guess that's about what you'd have liked to have done better against Pittsburgh, but this is a reasonably successful weekend. I wanted to talk, though, briefly on Nikita Soshnikov. And we're not going to spend a ton of time on it because he's kind of a bit player around here. But there's been a lot of people up in arms about how this has all been handled by the Leafs. And between he and Josh Levo being held out of the lineup, Soshnikov gets hurt, misses a bunch of time, which frees up a roster spot for the Leafs. That's good. Then he gets back and he's healthy, and they send him down on a 5-game conditioning stint to the American Hockey League and the Toronto Marlies, where he gets 5 points in 5 games. Sure looks pretty healthy, looks pretty good. At the end of that conditioning stint, the Leafs decide they're not taking him off IR. And everybody blows up, oh, it's Lou circumventing the cap. And he kind of is. Now, in the CBA, it says that the conditioning stint is to determine whether or not the guy is ready to return to play in the National Hockey League. It doesn't say after he completes it, you have to take him off IR. So in that regard, they haven't done anything wrong. On the other hand, everyone can see the kid is clearly healthy. Clearly healthy after the weekend. And so it's kind of fucked up that you're leaving him on IR. So they were in a roster squeeze. They did need to get something done. They trade him to St. Louis for a 4th-round pick. That's probably about right. I'm seeing a lot of people online that with that kind of potential and that kind of skill, and he's got NHL experience and he's young and has a good contract, that they should have got more. There's a couple of things there. He doesn't have that much experience where you could say you should have got more. The rest of the league knows you're in a roster crunch, that you have to do something. A, because you can't get all your guys onto the roster as it is, and because if you want to have any flexibility at the deadline, which is coming up just a week away now, you need to shed some contracts. So the whole league's kind of got you by the nuts, knowing you have to do something. And he's had some injury problems. He doesn't have a long resume. I think he's an NHL winger, probably bottom six, almost certainly bottom six. And the Leafs also have no room there. With your Levo, look, you look at Kapanen and Levo, and you've got Matt Martin sitting out, which is where I think he should be. You've got Andreas Johnsson in the minors, who's clearly ready to come up and do something else, to do something more at the next level. Like, this was similar to when they unloaded Tobias Lindberg in the, what the hell's his name? Come on, you guys, you're with me. The goalie they picked up from Vegas, Pickard, Calvin Pickard. he was a reasonably talented winger. Whether or not he'll be an NHL winger, I don't know, but he wasn't going to be an NHL winger here. The Leafs have, they're very thin up the middle, but they have a pile of NHL quality wingers, both in the NHL and in the American League. So they really didn't have a lot of negotiating power when it came to making a deal like this. You're talking to St. Louis. St. Louis is interested. They'd like to take him, but they know you don't have room for him. They know you don't have room for him on the roster or in your cap situation. They know you have a surplus at that position. And the player that you're looking to unload, people assume he's going to be okay, but you don't know that yet, stats-wise or injury-wise. The fact that you got a fourth-round pick, not bad. Maybe the absolute most you were going to get is a third-round pick. You absolutely weren't getting a second for him. You definitely weren't getting a first, obviously. And you didn't want a player back. You needed the roster space, right? You needed to unload a roster spot to give yourself a little flexibility going into the deadline. And so I by no means think this was a steal for the Leafs. Obviously, all they got was a draft pick. But I don't think it was the end of the world either. I think he probably got about what he was worth. And more importantly, it gave you a little bit of flexibility to do some other things, hopefully. And we'll see what the Leafs do at the deadline. I'm personally, and maybe we'll get into this later this week with Rob on Tall Can Sports, I don't think the Leafs are going to do much. The blue line isn't as bad as people say. It's not good. There are glaring holes all over the place. I'll grant you that all day. But I don't think there's anybody out there that fixes that they're going to be willing to pay the price on. So I don't think they're going to do much there. Maybe a fourth line center. I could see that. Babcock clearly doesn't like Dominic Moore. But there won't be any big bang here, I don't think. The Leafs just, I think they're going to ride this out, see how they do this year. Like I said, if they could grab a fourth line center, I could see them doing that. But that's probably the extent of it. So I think it might be kind of quiet. But they do now have, you know, you're only allowed to have 50 contracts. And they had 50, which meant they couldn't do a one-for-two thing if they had to. They couldn't do much. They couldn't trade picks for a player because they would have had too many. Now you do have at least one open roster spot. I wouldn't be surprised if they try and unload another minor player going into this just to give themselves a little more flexibility so they're not trapped. But I don't see anything big happening. I just don't. So that's probably going to do it for this episode of Unforced Errors. As I mentioned, Amy Burke returns on Tuesday to talk about all kinds of stuff going on around the Olympic Games in Pyeongchang, Korea. Rob Christie will return later in the week, the usual co-host, co-pilot. He'll be back on the show and we'll get to everything else happening in the world of sports, maybe a little audio whiplash. If you haven't had a chance, check out last week's show over at tallcanaudio.com. We got Rob, we got Amy over there on a few different topics. You can check them all out or hit us up at tallcanaudio on Twitter, facebook.com/tallcanaudio. All our shows are listed there. We'd be happy to interact with you over there. Chat about whatever's on your mind. Let us know what you think of the shows, all these sorts of things. Haven't asked you to do this in a while. If you haven't done so yet, open up your podcast app and give us a rating. Give us 5 stars. We'd really like it. But give us a rating. Give us a little review. It helps us out. It moves us up in the rankings on iTunes and these sorts of places. So that'd really help us out if you're looking to support the show. Of course, you can also support the show at patreon.com/tallcanaudio. So all kinds of stuff you can do to interact with us. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, my name's Matt Robinson, and this has been Unforced Errors number 66 on the Tall Can Audio Network.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.